From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Earlier this week, we invited you to send us your questions about the economy, the credit crisis, the sale of Bear Stearns to J.P. Morgan, and the Federal Reserve's role in solving the problems. Well, in this part of the program, we're going to answer some of those questions, and we are joined by two people who are going to help us.
NPR's Adam Davidson is with us. He's our international business and economic reporter. Welcome, Adam.
Hi, Michelle.
Also with us is former Federal Reserve Governor Lawrence Meyer. He's now Vice Chairman of Macroeconomic Advisors. Mr. Meyer, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here, Michelle.
Now, we received hundreds of questions, and we can't possibly get to all of them, but most of the questions could be grouped into a few categories. So we tried to pick broad topics that represent all those questions that arrived in our inbox, and let's get right to it. The first question comes from Jason Burt of Maple Valley, Washington. He says, I'm still puzzled at how the downturn of the subprime mortgage market has had such a dramatic effect on big financial institutions like Bear Stearns if the subprime mortgages are only a small portion of the American housing market and an even smaller portion are in jeopardy of default. How is this problem causing so much financial difficulty for banks and investment companies? Adam, so could you give us a basic explanation of how the subprime crisis became such a huge problem? I know this is very complicated, but if you could do this briefly for us.
First of all, it is ridiculous. It seems to make no sense. Housing altogether is only 5% of the economy. Subprime is a much smaller percentage of that. And then the subprime mortgages that are at risk of default is a much, much smaller percentage of that. It's like finding out that the rubber band business went under and that's going to crash the entire economy. One of the explanations is something called leverage. Basically, big banks like Bear Stearns, in fact, Bear Stearns almost more than anybody, used these subprime mortgages. They would leverage them. Here's how that works. They have, say, $1 million, but they borrow $30 million and invest that in securities backed by these subprime mortgages. If things are going up, that's a great idea because you get $30 back for every dollar you make. It's a wonderful way to make money. But it also works in reverse. If you have borrowed, if you're in debt by $30 for every $1 you own, if this starts going down just a little bit, just 1% goes down, suddenly that's magnified. Why in the world would you put yourself in that position? Well, it made total sense to put yourself in that position because on average across the economy, housing prices have never gone down in the history of the United States. So in 2003, who in the world would have thought that in the next few years, for the first time ever, housing prices would fall? I mean, back then, housing prices were rising faster than they ever had before. The problem is that by making those choices, they were so exposed, and that exposure was multiplied so many times that just the tiniest downtick in housing prices and the tiniest uptick in foreclosure rates just collapsed this entire system.
Well, here's a related question.
I'm Mary Lynn Buss from Fashion Island, Washington. We hear endlessly about all the money that has been lost due to the subprime debacle. Could you please elucidate where this lost money has gone? Certainly it didn't fall into the sea. Someone has found it. Follow the money.
Lawrence Meyer, where's that money?
Okay, that's a very, very, very good question. So let's think that you purchased several shares of General Motors and you paid $1,000 for it. Every day in the marketplace, those shares are revalued. And let's say that something happens and you could only sell it for $500. There's nobody on the other side. You lost $500. Nobody gained $500. The value of total equities in the economy is lower. The wealth of the private sector is lower. They're going to consume less. That's the story.
This comes from Juliet Holmes Smith of Portland, Maine. Why did the banks and investment companies buy up subprime mortgages as if they were secure and liquid when it only takes a quick investigation to understand that they are neither? I thought that these people were super smart. What was the motivation to make such bad bets?
Well, they certainly knew they weren't liquid, but they purchased them because they thought they were really high-valued paper. And for a AAA, it paid a very good rate of return. Now a lot of the mortgage originators are out of business, and the people who bought them are in trouble.
So this really isn't a question of intelligence.
Well, look, this is an event like a 100-year flood. You know, it's hard to predict. I mean, this is something outside of the experience of anybody who has been in the securities market in as an analyst of banks. It's something that would have been difficult to have foreseen.
Okay, now let's get on to some specifics about Bear Stearns. Here's another question.
Hi, I'm Stuart Zanger from Cincinnati. So what would have happened if the government had not stepped in with the bailout and allowed Bear Stearns to go bankrupt as a consequence of their role in the subprime mortgage failures? And what would the chain of events have looked like, and how would it have trickled down to middle-class working folks?
Adam Davidson, you want to tackle that hypothetical, what would have happened?
Sure. I think, first of all, we should not call this a bailout. Bear Stearns employees and shareholders and senior management suffered huge, huge, huge economic losses. Bear Stearns doesn't just have its own assets. Bear Stearns serves as what's called a counterparty. They are the middleman for countless billions of dollars in transactions. So working men and women might have their retirement fund through Bear Stearns, or lots and lots of smaller banks or smaller hedge funds might trade gold or trade stocks or trade other securities through Bear Stearns. Now, if Bear Stearns truly did go bankrupt, if they had completely gone out of business, you would start just an unbelievably long and complex legal process. You can imagine how complicated just a personal bankruptcy is. So just imagine this huge investment bank with just tens of billions of dollars in assets and all of these counterparty duties for people all over the world. We know that there would be thousands of Bear Stearns customers, all the way from small retirees all the way up to big, big hedge funds who would have huge amounts of money just frozen. And that's what the Fed wanted to avoid.
Well, can I just follow up on Mr. Zanger's question? Perhaps Lawrence Maher, you can answer. There have been brokerage houses, investment banks that have gone out of business. Drexel Burnham Lambert, Kidder Peabody, these places failed. What's the big difference?
Well, I think the financial world is different and more complex. It is simply unthinkable that a major global investment bank or commercial bank could simply say, we're out of business, we'll meet you in bankruptcy court. They're too intertwined with the rest of the financial institutions and the rest of the economy to allow that to happen. So they are too big to fail in the sense of just closing the door and going out of business. But the way you avoid moral hazard, people thinking that they're going to get bailed out and they can take on riskier assets, the way you avoid that is to wipe out the shareholders. And that's what happened. The stock went from 170 to 2. Okay? So they didn't feel bailed out. Workers are losing their jobs. Senior management that had most of their wealth in Bear Stearns, boy, their situation is different. And workers who had most of their pension in Bear Stearns stock are devastated. So Bear Stearns certainly wasn't bailed out, but it simply can't go out of business. It can lose its name, but its counterparty obligations have to be taken on by somebody else.
We received many questions about the executives at Bear Stearns, the people that Adam referred to as the middlemen or middlewomen. John Mazur sent in this question. Is there some practical way that the bridge-playing CEO and other top executives of Bear Stearns can be monetarily punished by preventing them from walking away from this fiasco with multimillion dollar severance payments? Lawrence Maher, that
well,
goes to exactly
as,
what
yeah,
you were
exactly
just talking about.
Exactly, as Adam talked about. They weren't rewarded. They were significantly penalized. Now, what I don't know is about the severance packages, but my guess is none of those severance packages come into play here. That's if you leave on good terms and leave a viable company, not when you go into the situation that Bear Stearns had.
Well, here's a question about the clients of Bear Stearns from Jet Whitehead of Bay City, Michigan. The question is, my parents, aged in their mid-80s, have most of their savings invested in a variety of stocks and mutual funds purchased through an investment advisor at Bear Stearns. Will their investments be affected by the recent Bear Stearns acquisition by J.P. Morgan Chase?
They will now become customers of J.P. Morgan Chase. If Bear Stearns had gone bankrupt, Jet Whitehead's parents in their mid-80s would not have access to that money until bankruptcy court resolved it many years from now when they were in their late 80s or early 90s. That's exactly why the Fed stepped in, so that they can transfer their account to J.P. Morgan Chase. It'll happen automatically. They don't have to do anything.
Let's move on to some of the questions about the Fed's action this week. Many of our listeners were concerned not just about Wall Street, but also about Main Street.
I'm Susan Dreyer-Leon from Springfield, Vermont, and I'm wondering why the markets feel comfortable with the Fed actions to help J.P. Morgan buy Bear Stearns, but not with government action to provide real relief to homeowners who cannot pay their mortgages.
This action is really quite controversial. There are differences of views of people who are represented in the market. People do worry about moral hazard, although I think that Bear Stearns was significantly punished. But it is very controversial. The Fed has taken some credit risk onto its portfolio that it wasn't really set up to do. And that's controversial as well. But as we noted before, these big global investment banks are simply too big to simply go out of business. Now, what about homeowners? Don't they deserve a break too? Well, one of the things here that's important to understand is there are certain things that the Federal Reserve can do, and there are certain things that the government, the administration, and Congress have to do. Now, when you're talking about helping the homeowners, you're dealing with Treasury and the President and the Congress. Again, there's moral hazard issues as to whether you should do that, but the problem is so significant here with so many spillovers to the rest of the economy, I think you could reasonably argue that it is a time for Treasury and the administration to put some taxpayers' money at risk here in order to reduce the risks and help homeowners.
Here's a question from Arthur Blake of Alpharetta, Georgia, one of several people who asked about the overall economic picture, and he wrote this: the news about the economic fallout seems to be getting scarier and scarier each day. Are we headed for another Great Depression? And if so, what's the best way to prepare for that? Lawrence Meyer?
Well, let's put things in perspective. During the Great Depression, the unemployment rate rose to something like 25%. The unemployment rate today is incredibly low, 4.8%. We're basically at full employment. It's amazing that we're at full employment and the Fed has already eased by 3 percentage points. That is really, really incredible.
You're saying that's a technical definition of full employment, to have much unemployment.
Yeah, I mean, I won't get into it, but that's where we think full employment is. Now, there are lots of bad things happening. Why is it unlikely that we would have something like the Great Depression? Well, we got deposit insurance that we didn't have before, so that reduces the potential for runs on banks. We have a very large government. 20% of the economy is the government. They're not going to shrink their spending when a recession comes. So the federal government's large size is a benefit at this point and reduces the risk of recession. We have a very activist Fed who really understands now how to support the economy in times like this. And we have government policy that will certainly come into play if it turns out to be a severe recession. A typical post-war recession pushes the unemployment rate up 2 percentage points. It won't feel good. Unemployment rate would get up to something like 6.5% under those circumstances. So it would be painful. But let's put in perspective, nothing like the Great Depression.
So you won't advise Mr. Blake on what he should do, Justin?
No, I don't.
Buy gold or something like that.
I'm not a certified financial analyst, so I can't answer that question.
Okay.
We'll have to leave it at that. Thanks to all of our listeners who took the time to send in their questions. And thanks also to former Federal Reserve Governor Lawrence Meyer and NPR's Adam Davidson. We're so glad that you both were with us.
Well, it was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Michelle.